We're going to start talking to people who know a lot more about these guys than we do. We're going to kick it off with Brian Howell of BuffZone.com, covering Colorado. Obviously, LaVisca Chenault at the top of a lot of people's minds when it comes to Colorado prospects, a lot of other guys as well. And he joins us on the Comcast Business Hotline Beyond Fast. Brian, thanks for joining us, man. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Doing great. How's quarantine life treating you?
Well, so far so good, dealing with homeschooling with the kids, but overall pretty good.
Well, good. I hope that in draft season your work is also ramping up a little bit, because obviously there's a lot of names on the Buffs that are generating a lot of attention, and it starts off with LaVisca Chenault, who unfortunately that core injury kind of limited what he was able to do at the combine. And when you covered him, what jumped out about him to you when you were watching him play?
Well, he's really, when healthy, he's the best player Colorado's had in 25 years. I mean, Rashawn Salaam won the Heisman Trophy in 1994, and I think LaVisca's the best player CU's had since him. The issue with him has always been his health. I mean, he missed some games in his second year, sophomore year, with an injury, and then, you know, last year missed some games as well, and just dealt the injury all season. So, he was never fully healthy the 2 years he really played at CU, but so people didn't really get to see his full potential. But when we did, it was really good.
And that's saying something, considering that there have been NFL receivers that have passed through, like Paul Richardson's one off the top of my head that came kind of recently playing for the Seahawks and a couple other teams at this point. What is it about Chenault's game that, when he's healthy, does make him so special?
Well, he's not just a receiver. You know, he's a guy that you know, there's WR for receiver, there's RB for running back. He's a guy you got to kind of put OW, just offensive weapon, because he's a guy that can run out of the backfield. He can line up as even a tight end. He can line up in the slot, outside receiver. He can do so many different things. And he even played wildcat quarterback for the Buffs at times. He was their short yardage back for the last 2 years. So he's just a special talent. He's a big physical kid. I mean, he's a receiver who lifted with the lineman, because that's how strong he was, and one of the fastest guys on the team as well. So, I mean, just a physical freak.
In terms of player comparisons, the one that I've seen pop up, actually most for him, it's funny that you brought that up, was Le'Veon Bell. Do you consider that that is a fair comparison, or is there someone else that you've thought of that would be more accurate?
Yeah, it's interesting that he's compared to a running back, right? It tells you what type of receiver he is. And, you know, I talked to a scout a couple months ago, and he said that LaVisca reminds him a lot of Julio Jones, but also Christian McCaffrey. So if you can somehow combine those two guys, then you got LaVisca Chenault. And I think, you know, Le'Veon Bell and, you know, any hard runner that you can think of, you can put LaVisca in there, but then any big receiver you can think of, you can put him there. So he can really do a lot of everything. It's just a matter of whether he's going to be healthy enough to help a team.
Is there any kind of update regarding his health and where he sits kind of heading into the draft, and what his recovery timetable looks like?
I did see him post a video on Instagram the other day of him doing some cone drill or something like that, and he looked pretty good doing that. Certainly that's, you know, moving around his front yard, but I think that's a good thing that he's showing some signs of moving around. And he got the surgery. The injury that he suffered at the combine was really tweaking what he dealt with all of last season, and he never got it surgically repaired. So he finally got that done, and it sounds like it's not too bad of a recovery after that. So I imagine he'll be healthy by the time training camp rolls around, if there's a training camp, of course.
Brian Howell of BuffZone.com joining us now on the Comcast Business Hotline. Brian, last one on LaVisca. We have kind of been having this conversation regarding what the Eagles need and what they're looking for, and people are looking at both speed and a number one receiver type guy. Do you believe that LaVisca fits the bill?
I think so. And, you know, his 40 time, obviously he was injured at the combine, but his 40 time didn't show up. He's one of those guys that just, he's got football speed, and if you go watch some of his highlights, look at some of the film where, you know, he takes a short pass and he is just gone. I mean, he's a guy that with the ball in his hands, you can't catch him. And so he's a guy that's got good speed, and I think he can be a number one receiver. And again, it's all about whether he stays healthy or not. And if he does, I think he's going to be a really good player for a long time.
Some of the other players on Colorado might also be interesting to the Eagles, especially given that they're at position of need. Davion Taylor is one of those, an explosive athlete at linebacker. Still kind of, some people are saying, finding his way in terms of learning the position and even learning the game at a refined level. What's your sense of him in the time that you've covered him?
Yeah, he's a guy that's just going to get better. I mean, he did not play high school football, then went out to a junior college and played a couple of years there before coming to CU. He really is just learning how to play the game. And, you know, had two different head coaches in 2 years at Colorado. And really last year, he told me, the CU's head coach last year, Mel Tucker, was the first one to really kind of teach him how to be physical because he's never really had that part of his game. He's only played for 3 or 4 years. So he's just learning how to play football, really. He's a guy that's a project. I'm not sure he's going to help people, help a team this year, but he's a guy that, you know, he's super fast for his size, and he's very physical now that he's learned how to do it. So I think he's going to be a pretty good linebacker, but it might take a couple of years for him.
Is it a situation where you could see him contributing more on special teams early on, or is there is it a question of finding the right scheme and a coach who can utilize his talents to get him on the field maybe a little bit earlier?
Well, I think for him it's probably a special teams type of guy, at least that first year. And he even told me that at his pro day, that he thought that that's kind of where he would project, is more of a special teams guy and learn the NFL game and just develop a little bit more this next year. And then be a linebacker, you know, potentially a starting type of guy after that. So I think he's a guy that can fit into any scheme just because of the physical tools that he has. It's just a matter of kind of getting used to the game a little bit.
And when you look at Davion Taylor, one of the things that jumped out to me was that there was a pretty sizable gap in terms of his 40 between his combine and his pro day. Based on what you've seen, understanding your eyes aren't stopwatches, Brian, do you see him as more of a 4.5 backer or a 4.4 backer?
I think he's, he's a track guy, so he can certainly run a 4.4, with pads on. I mean, we'll see what he is, but I think he's a 4.4 type of guy. I mean, he was a 100-meter and 200-meter sprinter on the CU track team, so he's a really good athlete and really fast. For 230 pounds, to be able to run like he does is pretty impressive.
Brian Howell, who covers the Colorado Buffaloes for BuffZone.com, joining us here. One of the other positions where the Eagles are going to be paying attention, if not this year, certainly in the near future, is either developmental or backup quarterback. And Steven Montez certainly has the frame that is going to have NFL scouts kind of drooling. What's your sense of him as a prospect and some of his strengths and weaknesses?
I do think he's a developmental type of guy that could really benefit from a year on a practice squad or that type of thing. I think he's a guy you look at maybe 2-3 years down the road. But he does have all the physical tools you want out of a quarterback. He's got maybe the best arm in the draft. I mean, he's got a really strong arm. It's just really a matter of developing his footwork and developing his football IQ. I mean, he still makes some mistakes and gets himself in trouble with his footwork at times. So it's really just a matter of him developing more with the game. And I think he's the type of guy that, without school as something to worry about, can really develop as he focuses on just football.
As a 4-year starter, what's your sense of Montez when he stepped onto campus versus now when he's stepping off with the NFL potentially ahead?
Well, for me, the biggest change in him was just his maturity. I mean, he's just, and a lot of us do that, right? We're different people from 18 to 22 years old, and he matured a lot. He was kind of the, happy-go-lucky partier type guy when he first got to college and enjoying that life, but really got serious and buckled down and grew up quite a bit. And, for him, his statistics don't look much different when you look at each of the last 3 years, but he also had three different head coaches, three different coordinators. So he had a lot of different offenses he was in and kind of went through some adversity there. But I think he really learned a lot by having all those different coordinators.
And finally, last one before we let you go, I want to get you on Delrick Abrams as well, because he's a guy that is interesting to me in that you watch the way that he moves and you think, all right, this guy's got something there. And then you see, no interceptions during his career and, some of the discipline, in terms of the penalties and stuff like that. What's your sense of him as a prospect and what can teams expect if they're going to take a chance on Delrick Abrams?
Yeah, I think he's a little bit like Davion Taylor in that he's a project. I think he's a guy that maybe 2 years down the road might be a pretty good player, but he's got good size, really developed. He was another JUCO. He was actually on Last Chance U at Independent College in Kansas. So he was on that show and played 2 years at CU. Got a lot better, developed his size, and he didn't have any interceptions, but I think part of that was he wasn't thrown to a whole lot because he was clearly their top corner when he was out there. So I think he's a project, a guy that will be better 2 years from now than he is right now.
Brian, anybody else on Colorado that we should know about to sound smart at our draft parties and things like that, or our virtual draft parties, as it were, with quarantine?
Well, as far as maybe a late round pick or maybe a free agent type of signee, another receiver to watch is Tony Brown, who was one of the leading receivers. He and LaVisca had the same amount of catches this last year. He really came on this year and really not a flashy type of receiver, but a really good hands guy, runs good routes. He's a guy that's going to help a team that I think could be a late round pick. And then offensive line wise, you look at Tim Lanai, he can play guard and center. Did both at CU, and he might be more of a free agent type pickup. He's a guy that's going to help the team, I believe, because of his versatility.
And joining us right now on the Comcast Business Hotline, Beyond Fast, he covers all things Penn State athletics for statecollege.com. Mike Poorman joins us, and we'll preview some NFL draft. Mike, thanks so much for joining us. How's quarantine treating you?
It's good. I live out in the boonies about 10 miles south of State College, so my closest neighbors, it's a herd of deer about a half a mile away.
I saw them going for a jog. Have you joined them yet? You trying to do the running with deer kind of situation yet?
No, they're still too fast. They're still a little hungry from the winter time. By summer, I think I can catch up.
Okay, yeah, you're still in the cutting phase. I completely get it.
Exactly.
Obviously, draft right around the corner. It's one of the weirder drafts. A lot of pro days and things like that have been canceled. Not a whole lot of hands-on interviews have been conducted with players, certainly not in person. What's this draft process and the run-up to this been like for you as you've been covering these guys and seeing what they've done and what they've prepared to do and seeing all of it kind of taken away by the virus here?
Well, a lot of it is, and I know we're going to talk about KJ, but a lot of it is, we missed out here, and the kids missed out here, the pro day. So, you know, KJ didn't get to run his 40s. And some people like Cam Brown didn't get to show what he's really all about. So you're right. There are a lot of questions. And it's, two things are happening. You talk about a Penn State kid. The Steelers have signed six guys from the XFL, so they're going – with more of the known quantities, and then they're going in, and this is no news to you guys, you're going in without that last 5% confidence level of really what someone's really like as a person, and can they replicate what they've done on film.
Mike Poorman joining us on the Comcast Business Hotline, Beyond Fast. Mike, if it's cool with you, I figure we'd just kind of run down the guys that you've been covering in more or less the order that they're expected to be selected and give us your sense of them. Is that cool?
Sounds good to me.
All right, perfect. So we'll start off in the first round. A lot of people looking at this guy as a pass rusher. Yetur Gross-Matos certainly will be gone, according to a lot of experts, by the back half of the first round. And, Mike, you talk about a guy who's been through a whole lot in his life. To see him this close to climbing the top of the mountain's got to be pretty cool.
Yeah, and I think given these unique times, the fact that on a personal side, he's been through a lot of tragedy and changes in his life. His stepfather is really a strong force in his life. So I think maybe more than a lot of people, his ability to maintain an even keel, his support at home is a good bridge to where he's going to go. I think the question with Yetur is, is he going to be somewhat of an Aaron Maben, a one-year wonder at Penn State who was a first-round pick and was a much better public school teacher than a defensive end?
Yikes. But, I mean, you look at what he brings to the table. Certainly the physical tools, the measurables, the explosiveness, all of those have to be attractive to teams. But, how do you measure with a guy like that production and over the course of a career versus what a guy might do on an NFL field?
Well, that is a big question. That's kind of the nod to Aaron Maben is the consistency. I mean, there was a 4 or 5 game dip this year where Yetur somewhat disappeared. He didn't have that consistency, and I think that's what you're looking for, a full season, 2 years. But there's no doubt that he has all the measurables that are really good. There's no doubt that when he shows up, he is a first-round guy. And I think it's a matter of the consistency factor with him.
Well, speaking of consistency, a guy who I thought could have done himself a world of help at the NFL Combine, KJ Hamler, hamstring tweak kind of limited his ability to run that sub-4.3 that I might have been expecting. What's your sense of what he was able to do at State College and who he might be at the next level?
Well, you know, I think, you know, as much as there's, in my mind, a little bit of a question mark about Yetur, KJ over the last 6 weeks, the last 2 months of the season, into the postseason, showed a really, to me, a high level of maturity, and it's kind of unique. We're really a small town here, so KJ's the kind of guy that literally, you know, I'll run into at Macy's or see him on campus or talk to him after a game, and you can really see a lot of growth and maturity. I know there's knocks about his drops. There's questions about his deep routes. But I think as far as being ready for the next level, I think he is. He's a great blend, of attitude with a spice of humility. But he carries himself like a professional player. And I think that's really integral.
Now, there are going to be a lot of people, Mike, that bring up his size and the fact that he's 5'8" and change and what limitations he might have on the field next year. Are those concerns, or do you see his ability, say, in the open field more than make up for those?
No, they're concerns. I think you have to go in eyes wide open. But I do think at 178, you know, he's a 2 or 3% body fat guy. He's a guy that has a 12-pack abs. So in that sense, every inch of him is good. I know there's a question with a hamstring at the combine, but, you know, he's compact. And I think what he brings to the table, and as I thought about this, there's two plays that didn't show up on the stat sheets this year. He had a 100-yard kickoff return against Michigan that was called back for a penalty that didn't impact the play. Same with an almost 50-yard punt return. I think when you throw those into the equation, you know, he's not going to be your deep threat, but he's going to be a guy in the slot across the middle, but he's going to bring that extra value added on your return game. And if you throw those two returns into the equation, his whole year is different.
And certainly he's a guy that we're looking at in that, I don't know if you're aware of the fervor that Philadelphia's worked themselves into over a guy like Henry Ruggs, a guy who can stretch the field and get deep. People who, though, have brought up a guy like Hamler as a consolation prize in the event that at 21 you're not looking at picking Henry Ruggs, people are pretty excited about him. Do you think that there is a fair comparison in some aspects of their games to a guy like Henry Ruggs, who's projected as a first-round talent?
Yeah, well, he's not a deep threat in that sense, but he's a short mid-range. I mean, he's a guy that, but Penn State, in a crucial game this year, needed a first down deep in the fourth quarter. They gave him a little toss out. I think it was against Indiana. It wasn't even a bubble screen because there's no one there. But he beat three guys as if he was in a phone book. So I think he's a guy that you can stretch and challenge. He's not a Tavon Hill, but there's a lot more to him that he can bring to the table that he has done at different times and circumstances. And the other thing is, those are two great examples, Michigan State, or 2 years ago against Ohio State when they needed a big play, he delivered. Or as a freshman in his first game, Appalachian State, as they were, Penn State was looking to lose in an upset, he had a big kickoff return. I mean, the moments are not, and I guess that's what I'm getting to about KJ, the moments are not too big for him, is that when the pressure's on, he has delivered. And I think that's a mentality, a testing that certainly in Philadelphia, you know, you're tested there. I think he can rise. He won't even rise to the occasion. He's delivered in those occasions.
talking Penn State prospects with Mike Poorman of statecollege.com. Mike, we'll move on to a guy that you mentioned, linebacker Cam Brown. Projections kind of all over the place for where Brown is going to end up in the draft. Some people closer to the end of the draft and some people more in the mid rounds. What makes Brown such an interesting NFL prospect?
Well, that's great. You know, he's a bit of a conundrum. You know, if he had 30 more pounds, we wouldn't be having this kind of discussion. But, you know, he's a basketball player still playing football, even though he's put on 30, 35 pounds in his career. He's smart. He's mature. He's versatile. He can move. But, you know, you wonder after exhibition games, a long season, whether he's going to be built for the long haul. Not that he's had injury problems, but he does not have the bulk. And not having the bulk, you question, you know, is he ever going to, you know, is he going to be a tweener? Is he going to be, can he make it as a nickel or something like that? You're going to have to see it. I think he'll forever be that utility guy that's going to be one of the last people on your roster, but you're going to keep because he can contribute in a lot of ways, and he's a positive force on your roster. But, you know, he won't be a star. He just lacks that bulk. He'd be a hell of a power forward, though.
Mike, do you think that considering, and from what we've seen at the pro level, there's been more of a willingness to adapt the big nickel and the dime and those kinds of defenses where you do have either a joker or a rover position or something like that. Do you believe that that helps out a guy like Cam Brown who might not have had that position 5 years ago?
Yeah, it does. The plus is he's a smart, savvy guy that's played a ton of football since his freshman year. But in all honesty, he does not have that extra step to make that happen. So he'll forever be that roster decision. What are you going to weigh one over the other? And I think that's will be his lot in life.
Moving on to John Reed, the corner, a lot of people projecting him to the Baltimore Ravens in a variety of rounds, whether it's round six, round seven. What have you seen of Reed during his time in State College?
Well, it's nothing. He's a computer guy. He's a geek. He's a super thinker. But, you know, in all candor, the John Reed from his first year or two is not the John Reed now. He had a really bad knee injury, and it's taken him a long, and this is no secret, it's taken him a long time to come back, and his intellect and his savvy and his smarts sometimes gets in the way of being reactive and being a football player and going back to what he was in his early days. In his early days at Penn State, he was a punt returner, and he was smart, and he was savvy, and he was instinctive, and I think he still has to get back. And he may never get back to being that instinctive guy. And I think, you know, at the level that we're talking about with the NFL, you know, he who hesitates is lost. And that's not a new thought, but that is a truism about Reed. And in that sense, that's unfortunate for him. So that's the question, whether he's an undrafted free agent or someone we'll take a gamble on him.
I think what might have helped him out a little bit, Mike, too, is that the Combine posted the fastest shuttle time of anybody. So, I mean, if teams had questions about the health of the knee, maybe that goes some step towards helping to ease those concerns. Finally, moving on, Robert Windsor has come a really, really long way from being the last ranked member of Penn State's 2015 recruiting class. Talking about a guy who is knocking on the door potentially of the NFL at this point. What is he bringing to the table as a defensive lineman?
Well, you know, it depends what week it is. There were times where Windsor dominated a game. There were times when he took over, and especially, here's a plus in his favor. He played better late in the season than he played earlier in the season, which shows a certain endurance, which shows a certain strength, which the games are bigger late in the season. So all those things are, you know, show to his character and his heart. Last season, he was a new guy. He came back. He was much thinner, much smarter. He had trained with the younger Watts back in Wisconsin. He took it seriously. So, you know, he came back after, you know, early in his career. He had some problems on and off the field. He took football seriously last year, And I think that will be his greatest attribute if you look at really his last six or eight games as opposed to the totality of his career.
Mike, does he remind you more of a guy who would succeed as a 4-3 defensive tackle or more of a 3-4 end?
He's a tackle. I cannot see. Windsor does not have. I mean, we go back to Yetur. I mean, there is literally no comparison. I think one of Windsor's greatest strengths is he allowed other things to happen. And sometimes that's what you want with a D tackle, right? So, you know, and sometimes his numbers may not be terrific, but he's an interior guy for sure.
And finally, some of the guys that we haven't mentioned still have a chance either, you know, at catching on somewhere or potentially being drafted. Steven Gonzalez, Jan Johnson, Garrett Taylor, maybe even Blake Gillikin. What do you anticipate the rest of the draft class or at least the NFL class to look like for Penn State?
Well, I think Gonzalez has a really good shot to especially the rosters, right? The rosters this year with the new CBA, they're adding an offensive lineman, right? So there's 32 more jobs at least out there. I think he fits in that category. If you're going to add one more O-lineman, he's the guy. He finished his career with more starts than any other player on the roster, so he's reliable. I think Gillikin is a very intriguing guy, and if he doesn't make it as a punter, he's going to be a great doctor. Jan Johnson could make a roster. He's smart. He's versatile. He won't have a long career. And Garrett Taylor, God love him. You know, if he was 2 inches bigger and had 20 more pounds, I'd say he has a big shot, but I think he has, I think it's going to be a tough row to hoe for him.
Mike, I've been trying to steal things from people so that I can sound intelligent at these socially distant draft parties that I go to.
Oh, so. You sound... I'm impressed.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate it, Mike. If I'm trying to sound really, really smart about Penn State and their prospects and things like that this year, what's something that I should be able to say that would impress my friends?
Wow, that's a great... When you say this year, I think this is what you should say. As I said, I think you should say they're going to play in the spring and you're going to play conference games or maybe only division games. I'm not sold on college football this fall.
Oh, you're not.
I can't see that happening. I just don't. I mean, my scenario has them playing a season in the spring, a conference schedule, or maybe even just a division schedule. Because here's why: it's still in the fiscal year. Mm. Penn fiscal year begins July 1 and ends June 30th. So a game in September pays the same as a game in March.
Okay. Makes sense. There we go. That's something that I'll use to sound smart. Last thing before I let you go, Mike, I've got to ask you about the play-by-play videos of the deer. I got to know.
What's that?
The play-by-play videos of the deer. I need to know. What's going on with the deer and the play-by-play videos online?
Well, every day I go out in the middle of the Pennsylvania forest, and I take videos of the wildlife I see, and then I challenge. Penn State's great. We have a lot of graduates who are in sports broadcasting. So, like last week, I challenged them, put a couple out, and asked a couple people to do play-by-play of what turned out to be five deers racing a 100-meter dash. And one stopped, dasher, and the one broadcaster said that he's done. So you never stop in the middle of a 100-meter dash, especially if you're a deer.
Talking NFL draft, NFL draft prospects, and we continue our series in which we've been talking to beat writers and people who are familiar with prospects from the individual schools in question. And we've got a treat tonight as joining us from The Athletic, Clemson football reporter Grace Rayner joins us on the Comcast Business Hotline. Grace, how you doing, and how's quarantine life treating you so far?
I'm doing well. Quarantine's going okay. Just hanging in there, trying to stay busy. How are y'all doing?
We're trying our best. Thank you so much for making the time and for coming on to join us. Based on what you've seen from this year's draft class group. We were talking about Travis Etienne going back to school, and obviously Trevor Lawrence is going to be in the draft next year by all accounts and the way things look. It seems like this year's draft class, for whatever reason, the guys in it seem to be kind of flying under the radar in a lot of situations. Do you find that to be the case? And if so, why is that?
Yeah, that's a good question. But, you know, especially certainly when you look at the Clemson guys, I think the guy that's probably flown under the radar the most that now seems to have the most buzz and uptick around his name is AJ Terrell. And this was, you know, cornerback we, some of us on the beat, thought might come back to school. And now all of a sudden, you know, we're hearing first round buzz for him. So I don't know maybe if our current situation has anything to do with why some of these guys are flying under the radar, or, you know, some of these in-person workouts haven't been happening like we thought they would, but it is an interesting complex for sure.
Looking at AJ Terrell, I thought that he had a fantastic season that got marred by a single game on a really big stage. But as someone who's covered him day in and day out and seen him over the course of his career, what's his pro potential? What does he do really well as a prospect?
Yeah, I think you're right when you said that, you know, obviously on the national stage, a lot of people saw his struggles against LSU, but, you know, this is a corner that was a really solid corner as a sophomore. And then as a junior, you know, a lot of teams didn't even really want to throw to him because they wanted to try to capitalize on Clemson's other corner, who was newer. And obviously AJ being as athletic and as talented as he is, you know, kind of made that tricky for other teams. But I mean, AJ, he was extremely highly recruited out of high school. He's very long. He's athletic. He plays in a Brent Venables system that seems to really have these guys prepared for the next level just because of how much it demands and how much Brent Venables asks of them. But I think you look at a guy like AJ and just a really long, athletic corner who matches up well.
Speaking of an athletic guy, Isaiah Simmons, his position on the draft board. First of all, full disclosure, my sister went to Clemson, so I am all about the Tigers. So I've seen a good number of these guys' games. And it seems like, for me, the fact that Simmons, top five, no, he's top 15, no, he's in the top 20, the fact that there's so much confusion around where he should go suggests to me that some teams might not really know how to use this guy versus saying, oh, I don't know how good this guy is.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're an NFL team and you don't know how to use Isaiah Simmons and you pass on him for that reason, that's kind of your problem. I mean, if you can't figure out what to do with Isaiah Simmons, I'm not really sure, you know, what you could figure out. I mean, he can play just everywhere. I mean, this is a guy that Dabo Swinney legitimately thought could be all conference at three different positions, as a safety, a linebacker, and if you add a few pounds on him, Dabo said, a defensive end. So Isaiah is probably the most athletic person I've ever seen live. But yeah, I'm with you. I don't really understand this range that he's also kind of fallen into in terms of where you take him. But I think if you need a defensive player and you pass on Isaiah, that to me, that's going to be to your own detriment.
And Grace, when it comes to Simmons, I think that some of the concern is people have looked at a guy like Derwin James, who played all over the field and played super effectively, and that translated to the NFL. And then a guy like Jabril Peppers, who did the same thing, and that has not translated as well to the NFL. Where would you put Simmons in terms of the range of those guys, the jack of all trades? You know, what's the one that's closest?
Yeah, I mean, I think that he leans more towards being effective as a jack of all trades just because, you know, I think a lot of people forget Clemson did use him as a safety the first year that he played after his redshirt year. So, and he came in as a safety and then, you know, really spent that summer going up to Brent Venables saying, hey, I think I want to be a linebacker to replace Dorian O'Daniel, obviously now at the Chiefs, and just try to figure out this new position. But I think that I would maybe have more questions if we hadn't seen him actually play all these positions at Clemson. And certainly the last 2 years was when he really broke out and Brent Venables really started using him in all these crazy, zany different ways. But in 2017, he was a safety and he does have experience there.
Grace Rayner of The Athletic joining us on the Comcast Business Hotline, talking Clemson Tigers football prospects. Haven't touched on T. Higgins yet, and obviously Philadelphia as a city is all a Twitter about this wide receiver class, seeing as kind of any warm body would give them more production than they got towards the end of last season. But T. Higgins is a guy who, once again, has been, is he a second rounder? Is he a first rounder? Given Clemson's wide receiving hierarchy and the, all of the royalty that they've had at that position, where do you see a guy like T. Higgins fitting in there in terms of his pro potential?
Yeah, I mean, you look at the wide receiver U, which Clemson kind of claims is, you know, their moniker, and to me, T is right there with DeAndre Hopkins, Sammy Watkins, Mike Williams. I mean, he's tied with Watkins and Hopkins for most career touchdown receptions. And, you know, he's just, it was always assumed with T when he was going into his sophomore year, but especially coming into his junior year, that, okay, he would be next in line in this long list of nine-man Clemson receivers who fall out and, you know, go on and make a big name for themselves in the NFL. So T, to me, is he's right up there with some of the best of the best. I mean, he's just incredibly athletic. This is a very high level basketball player in high school that had Division I offers to play basketball at the next level. Can just go up and get it. And so, I'm obviously we'll see how it works out. But T is to me one of the most exciting receivers I've seen covering Clemson.
And Grace, watch the rest of the team. There are so many players. Obviously, with Clemson being on the national stage, there are going to be a lot of guys who maybe get looks that wouldn't even necessarily if Clemson wasn't in the national championship game seemingly every other year. People have asked about Tanner Muse and what kind of pro he'll be. And the answer that I've kind of given is that it really does depend for Muse on kind of the system, where he would land, what his role is going to be. A guy who's from day one going to be willing on special teams. What's your sense of where Muse fits into the whole picture?
Yeah, I've heard Tanner say before that he thinks he might be a linebacker at the next level. And, you know, certainly I think you're right that he could make a pretty big contribution on special teams. But yeah, he's another guy who was in the Brent Venables system for 4 years. It's pretty versatile. I think he's a lot faster than people think he is, although a lot of people, I'm sure, picked up on that at the combine with his 40. But, yeah, he's a guy that the work ethic and the diligence and all that good stuff is going to be there. So I'm hopeful that he's also just a really good kid. So if he could get into a right fit with the right system and the right people, I think there's some potential for him to do well.
Grace, we there's obviously a ton of players left, but you know I could keep you on here all night. Who are some, who I guess is your favorite other draft prospect that we haven't talked about? Someone who might be flying under the radar, or someone who isn't getting enough buzz?
Yeah, I'll go with left guard John Simpson. Just first of all, just a great kid. Second of all, just a really consistent day in, day out offensive lineman at Clemson. And the offensive line at Clemson is really a position that hasn't made a lot of noise in the NFL for whatever reason. They really have not sent a lot of people onto the NFL like they have on the defensive line or in the wide receivers room. But John is a guy that, you know, Clemson cross-trains a lot of its O-linemen. He's pretty versatile. And then just a guy that I think will fit in really, really well in a locker room. He just has really fun, contagious energy. And I think people will really like him. But, yeah, he's probably one that, you know, and I'm sure part of that is just the nature of his position, being an O-lineman. But he's one I think people are maybe not talking enough about.
Now, Grace, this one, last one for you before we let you go. It's a more of a personal favor. Everyone that I've been talking to, I've been trying to steal something from them so that I can sound really, really smart at my draft Zoom parties or however we're social distancing and things like that. So if I want to sound really, really smart, something about the Clemson Tigers prospects this year or perhaps what's going on with them next year, what have you got for me that I can unleash on my friends?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, golly, you look at next year, and I mean, you've got Trevor Lawrence, you've got Travis Etienne. This pipeline isn't really slowing down at Clemson, but I don't know. I'd maybe put your marbles on John Simpson. I think that they'll make a team better, and I hope that's right for his sake and for the sake of this conversation, but. I mean, you could really just pick. There's so many this year and certainly coming through in 2021 that I have a feeling that Just pick one and you'll sound smart. And talk to your sister. She'll know.
Yeah, she's locked in. There's no doubt about it. Grace, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate your perspectives. And best of luck. I'm sure that you've got a ton to do here trying to keep pumping stuff out here during the social distancing and whatnot.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. We're just trying to stay busy.
And it is my pleasure now as we continue our process leading up to the draft, bringing on people who know a lot more about these prospects than we do. Continuing this series is Drew Davison, who covers all things TCU for the Star Telegram. He joins us now on the Comcast Business Hotline Beyond Fast. Drew, thanks for doing this. How's quarantine life treating you?
It's treating me probably like everyone else. Ready to get out, get back out, but, you know, kind of doing what I can to do my part, so to speak.
So how's this going to affect the way that you cover the draft? Like, I'm not familiar with how, like, what the media guidelines are going to be for the draft. Is that something that's been made apparent to you yet at this point?
Not really. You know, covering, like, last year, for instance, I went out to LJ Collier's draft party, and he ended up being the 27th or 28th overall pick by the Seahawks. So this year the plan was to kind of go to Jalen Reagor's draft party, which, you know, he grew up in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. But, you know, clearly that's not going to happen. He's still one of the 58 players doing it. But, yeah, as far as myself, I'll just be watching from home probably for the first time since I've come to the Rangers, I guess, back in 2013.
Wow, so that'll be an interesting socially distant way to take all of that in. Jalen Reagor is actually a perfect place for us to start, Drew, because he's a name that's really been gathering a lot of steam here in Philadelphia, potentially as a first-round pick. So can you kind of take us inside his career and who he is during the time that you've covered him?
Yeah, I mean, clearly he's a former NFL football player's son, Monte Reagor, who played up in Seattle. And was actually, you know, part of the coaching staff, I think, for a season or two under Andy Reid. But so he certainly got the bloodlines, got the genes. And just, you know, I always tell people he's a home run threat with the ball in his hands. I mean, he's kind of like, or he was TCU's version of Tyreek Hill, so to speak. You know, he can take the top off the defense. He doesn't need much space to make people miss. So, you know, for the Eagles to be, you know, I would feel comfortable. He can play outside. He can play inside in the slot. He's, you know, got a huge vertical where he can, you know, go high point the ball and win the 50-50 ball, so to speak. So he's a pretty complete receiver. The big knock on him this last season was obviously his production. He didn't really have the numbers. Part of that's on him. You know, he did have some drops, but, you know, that's obviously something he's got to work on and focus on. And part of that was, you know, just quite simply TCU had a true freshman quarterback. He's got a lot of promise, but he went through kind of your typical growing pains as a first-year starter at the college level.
Well, Drew, we went through recently here in Philadelphia. A mutiny or a coup is a little bit of a strong word, but there was certainly a divide in the locker room between preferences for two quarterbacks. And one of the things that got my attention when I was reading about Reagor and his profile is one of the things that showed up on tape to people is the frustration at times with quarterback play. Is that something that you think is exclusive to Reagor, or was that something that generally throughout TCU's offense was kind of a growing pain situation?
Well, you know, it's kind of a two-part question because I think everyone on offense got somewhat frustrated because it was kind of a speed bump offense, so to speak. Just when things seem to get going well or them finding their groove, they hit a speed bump and kind of take two steps back. And it was just kind of that like that throughout the season. I mean, they looked great, you know, at Purdue 1 week and then struggled the next. So I think part of that was just growing frustrations, but – you know, if you go back to 2018 when Jalen Reagor had a 1,000-yard season, TCU had used four quarterbacks that season. So he was able to, you know, still produce and whatnot with the different quarterbacks. I think the other part of his frustration, I mean, he was expecting to be a Biletnikoff right up there, you know, as the top receiver in the country, and clearly the numbers, the stats weren't coming. for the type of season he was envisioning for himself. So I'm sure, you know, part of the frustration lied within him as well as the offensive struggles.
Do you believe, just personally and from what you've seen from the teams that you covered and from what you're hearing, do you believe that he will be a first-round pick, or do you anticipate that he is a day two selection?
I mean, me personally, I think he's going to be a first-round pick. I think one of the 32 teams, whether it's the Eagles, whether it's the Minnesota Vikings, whether it's the Raiders, going down the list, I think one of these teams is really going to fall in love with him and make him a first-round pick just because he's so dynamic at that level. Everyone's looking for playmakers. Everyone's looking for guys who can take it to the house with the ball in their hands. So, I don't think he's going to get taken over CeeDee Lamb or Jerry Jeudy, but I certainly think late in the first round, some team's going to covet his skills enough where he's going to go in the first round.
Drew Davison joining us on the Comcast Business Hotline, who covers TCU for the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. Drew, one of the other guys that has been garnering a lot of speed here, and I think noteworthy and justifiably so, Jeff Gladney is really climbing up a lot of people's cornerback boards. What did you make of Gladney during your time covering him?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's certainly checked a lot of the boxes. When you're looking at, you know, cornerback prospects for the NFL, the thing with him, and you know, he can't do anything about it. You know, some teams just like the longer corners these days, the taller corners, and he's not that. He's not 6'2". He's not, you know, he doesn't check that measurable, so to speak. But he is on the field. You know, he held his own with some of the top receivers in the country. You know, obviously the Big 12 produces a lot, and he went against a guy like Jalen Reagor every day in practice. So he does check the boxes. He's got good speed. You know, I've seen some scouts describe him as a junkyard dog, and just covering him, you know, that bill fits because, you know, he's a willing tackler. He'd get involved. He'd get in the mix. And, you know, he was feisty. He obviously is probably going to have to refine some of his technique, you know, to avoid some penalties, but there's no question he should be playing on Sundays in my mind.
Moving on elsewhere on the defense, it's a really strong defensive tackle draft, it seems, and Ross Blacklock is one of the talented defensive tackles in this draft. But with that 2018 injury, how much did you see that kind of hurt what he was able to do on the field and potentially hurt his draft stock as well?
Yeah, I mean, that's a big question mark, because as you guys know, I mean, players have to be available, right? You know, if they're not on the field, they're not going to be able to produce. But Rockback, it did take him. He had an Achilles injury in 2018, like you said. And it took him a few, four, five, six games even with TCU last season before Ross Blacklock really looked like the player people remembered and people viewed him becoming at the college level. And you know, if you look at his film, he's got some very explosive plays. He can get that inside pass rush, which is obviously coveted in the NFL, the three techniques, the under tackle position. So he also played a lot of nose for TCU. But, you know, I think at the combine he checked in at 285. I think his playing weight's probably more about 305, so he'll bulk up and probably need to in order to hold his own up there.
Drew Davison of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram joining us on the Comcast Business Hotline discussing TCU draft prospects. I'm fascinated when there are multiple guys from similar positions that are going to be going in the draft and potentially selected, and that's true in a couple places with TCU. But let's start out running back with Darius Anderson and Shewo Olanolua. Like, what are teams getting if they're looking at each of those guys? What does one give that maybe the other doesn't?
Yeah, I mean, I think those two are very different backs in terms of production at the next level. Starting with Shewo Olanolua, he's a taller running back. He's got good size. He's actually lined up some at tight end, H-back, so he's a versatile player out of the backfield. You know, I think he'd be a good short yardage guy, possibly even a fullback. You know, when he was coming out of high school, Gary Patterson actually wanted him to play linebacker But of course, he preferred to stay at running back. So certainly a good athlete, a good body. Athleticism. He tests well, and I think a team will find ways to use him and get the most out of his skill set. Darius Anderson, on the other side, is kind of what was more the lightning to Alana Lewis Thunder, so to speak, more of a home run threat. He had a 92-yard touchdown run against Ohio State in 2018. He has battled injuries throughout, but he certainly has that burst, that speed to get on the outside and make some things happen. So the question with him is pass protection and being able to be a three-down back at the next level. But both of those guys, different traits, but both should get opportunities to try and make an NFL roster.
And, Drew, the other position that I was talking about, offensive line in particular, we know that generally speaking, offensive tackles are rated more highly than offensive guards, except in, you know, some exceptions. But when I'm looking at Lucas Niang at 6'6", 315, when I was watching, I couldn't help but thinking that this guy's the real deal. What do you make of him playing on such a good offensive line at TCU, and can he hold his own even if those guys weren't there?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he didn't give up a sack the last two seasons. Like you said, he passes the eye test. He's got the measurables. And from what I've heard, is rehab's going well. So a team will be very fortunate, to get him, in round three or whenever he goes, because, he's a guy who could theoretically – compete for a starting job probably from day one and possibly win it. So he does check all the boxes, and I think he's going to, have a nice long career, either as a starter at right tackle or even a swing tackle. But TCU's kind of produced a lot of tackles over the last few years under Gary Patterson, whether it's Marshall Newhouse or Marcus Cannon. So, I think Lucas Niang is just going to kind of keep that tradition going, so to speak.
Drew, I've been doing this with all of our guests, and thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to join us here. I've been trying to steal something from everyone so that when I have my Zoom socially distant draft party, I can sound really intelligent. So if there's something that I'm looking for, a nugget to make me sound like the smartest guy in the room when it comes to talking about TCU, what would you have me say to people?
Man, you're putting me on the spot. I'm really trying to think. When it comes to Rager, I think you can point to a lot of different things. But I think you just turn on that 2018 Baylor game and kind of watch him go to work. But that's not really, I don't think, the nugget you're looking for. You put me a little bit in a tight spot. I wasn't expecting that question. Although I will say, now that I'm thinking about it, of course your Eagles fans are probably, Big V went to TCU, so obviously I forgot about that. He's obviously in the tackle line, but I think all of them, or especially the three potential first rounders in Rager, Blacklock, Gladney, I think, they should all, I'm a little biased, but it's hard to see. I think all of them should be pretty successful. I don't see any of them really flaming out wherever they land.
And Drew, last one before I let you go, and sorry to put you on the spot there, but you handled it beautifully. Anyone that we did not discuss that you consider to be either a hidden gem, someone who is not getting enough glow or enough shine heading into the draft process that you anticipate having either a really good chance to make a roster or potentially even being a difference maker?
Yeah, I would say two guys kind of come to mind. One on offense, Anthony McKinney, who struggled the last 2 years at left tackle. He's still kind of a raw prospect. Didn't start playing until his junior year in high school. Went the JUCO route, but he kind of checks all the boxes that we talked about. Lucas Niang, just tall, looks the part. So I think he's got a chance if he lands in the right system. Obviously he'll be a project, but I think he could develop into an NFL player one day. And then on the other side of the ball, Shamik Blackshear was a really highly touted prospect coming out of high school, went to South Carolina, was a graduate transfer to TCU, hasn't really put up the numbers, but the athleticism's there. And, you know, I think he could get a chance at the next level. And if he does, he's also been working at blocking tight end. So I think he could be, one of those undrafted guys no one's really heard about that could, you know, possibly carve himself out a niche up there.
Well, Drew, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate you taking the time. What are you working on now that people should be going and checking out?
Well, I'm kind of working on those three profiles, just kind of where they might land, the Jalen Reagor, Blacklock, but also doing a big picture, kind of the Big 12. This could be only the second time in the last 11 years it doesn't look like the Big 12 is going to have a top 10 pick. And when you look at the last 2 years, they obviously had the top overall pick with the Oklahoma quarterbacks and Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray. So not necessarily if it's a down year for the Big 12, so to speak, but certainly it's odd that they don't have a guy penciled in as a top 10 lock.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.